This is the Texas Standard. I'm David Brown. For decades, jailhouse informants have been presented as credible witnesses at criminal trials. In the movies, you've probably seen them called snitches. They take the witness stand and testify about what they say they've heard while they've been held in the same facility or even the same cell as the defendant. Using one jailed suspect to testify against another is perfectly legal, but the practice has come under more scrutiny recently. In Sunday's New York Times Magazine, Austin-based investigative reporter Pamela Koloff profiled one such man, Paul Skalnick. He's a fallen police officer who was frequently in and out of jails in Texas and Florida. His testimony as a jailhouse informant has helped send 37 people to prison and 4 people to death row in Florida. Pam, welcome to the Texas Standard.
Thank you so much for having me.
Paul Skalnick started out as an Austin Police Department official in the 1970s. I guess he was a police officer. How did he end up in jail and as a career jailhouse informant?
He was very briefly an APD officer, but he quickly began writing hot texts and got in trouble with law enforcement. And the way that he would get out of trouble, he was charged 31 times over the course of the 70s and 80s and 90s, is he would claim to have overheard a confession of somebody he was jailed with, usually someone who was awaiting trial, who prosecutors very much needed to get a conviction with. And that was his sort of get out of jail free card.
Why is it that criminal courts consider jailhouse informants reliable? I mean, is some kind of corroboration to a jail suspect's testimony against another required?
In most states, corroboration is not required. In states where corroboration is required, it can be as simple as having another jailhouse informant confirm the facts that the first jailhouse informant said. Or as I found, many of the details that law enforcement or prosecutors were claiming were known only to them, and that the only way that Paul Skalnick could have obtained them was from the suspect in the case. They were actually basic details that if you read the newspaper or watched anything about the case on TV, you would be able to glean. And he used those details to weave together these very incendiary narratives that made juries want to convict.
Given that jailhouse informants in many situations have an incentive to use the vernacular, snitch on someone else who might be behind bars, I'm a little surprised that more states aren't banning the use of jailhouse informants because of that self-serving aspect of such evidence.
Yes, and what's so interesting about that is that even when juries are informed of the fact that there's going to be a deal or some benefit to these witnesses, which often they are not, by virtue of the fact that prosecutors are putting these witnesses on the stand, that they're state witnesses, there's an implicit understanding by jurors that these are trustworthy witnesses because the state is putting them on there. And studies have shown even if jurors understand that there is a benefit that they're receiving, that sort of understanding that the state is sponsoring their testimony overcomes that.
That is really interesting. Okay, so Skalnick's testimony has led to 4 people serving on death row. What's the status
Correct.
Of their cases?
So only 2 of them are still on death row. The other 2 men were resentenced to life. The case that I focus on is the case of James Daly, who was convicted of a 1985 murder in Florida of a young girl, strictly on the word of his co-defendant, who all the evidence pointed to. And when that co-defendant refused to testify against him in court, they brought Paul Skalnick in, and he was sort of the closer for prosecutors, and he told this story that placed the murder weapon in James Daly's hands. And Mr. Daly had an execution date set of November 7th. There was a stay of execution that's in place through December 30th. After that, Governor Ron DeSantis in Florida can set a new execution date for him. And so my story explores the problems with that case.
We're going to have a link to it over at texasstandard.org. Pamela Koloff is a reporter for ProPublica and the New York Times Magazine. Pam, thanks so much for spending a couple of minutes with us on the Texas Standard.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
And you are listening to the Texas Standard.